your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Welcome to Healing the Grieving Heart with your host, the mother-daughter team of Dr. Gloria Horsley and Dr. Heidi Horsley. Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi have devoted their lives to helping individuals move forward after a profound loss and each week share stories of hope and understanding. They dedicate their show to their son and brother Scott and to others who have lost loved ones. Now join Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi and share the journey from grief and loss to hope and renewal.
Hello, I'm Dr. Gloria Horsley with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Each week, Heidi and I welcome you to Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and conversation with those who suffered the loss of a loved one and for healthcare professionals who work in this most difficult field. As always, the message is others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. This show is brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation, and all shows are archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. All shows can be downloaded on iTunes, and transcripts can be accessed on thegriefblog.com. Well, Heidi, good morning. We've got a great guest today.
Good morning, Mom. Yes, I'm very excited. Bernie Siegel has written a lot of books, and he knows a lot about the topic. And I'm really excited to have him on talking about healing and hope after loss.
Yeah, and it's a great time because it's Thanksgiving Day today, and we know that it is a rough time for a lot of you out there. And we hope that we'll be able to bring you some support at this time.
Well, and you know, I've said before, in some ways Thanksgiving can be the absolutely hardest holiday because of the word Thanksgiving. And a lot of people will sit there and when, you know, you have this, a lot of people have rituals where you go around the table and say what you're thankful for, and their response is, why is there anything to be thankful for today? My child died, or my sibling died, or my spouse died. There is nothing to be thankful for in my life right now.
Absolutely. It can be so hard getting together with people. On the one hand, it can be really difficult. On the other hand, it can also be supportive. It just, you know, it's different for everybody, and the day means different things for different people. But one of the things I suggest that you do is maybe have a little ritual for yourself if you're going out. Maybe light a candle with your little family group or something, because I've had a lot of people tell me that one of the problems for them is they don't feel like that their loss was recognized enough when they went somewhere else. So try to do a little something to hold that energy for yourself, don't you think?
I think that's a really important point, and to have no recognition is, for me, the worst case scenario, the worst thing that could happen, even if it's a toast or, like you said, that we give in honor of the person that died or light a candle or whatever we do. Acknowledgement is really important. It means a lot to people.
And you might want to, your host or hostess, if you're going somewhere or if it's a relative, you might want to pick one relative that you really kind of get along with and say, would you mind, you know, doing something, a toast or something, or and have them advocate for you can be a way to go. Well, Heidi, our guest is going to be just filled with so much wonderful information. Why don't you introduce him?
I'd be honored to. Our guest today is Dr. Bernie S. Siegel, and our topic today is Finding Thanksgiving After Loss. Dr. Bernie Siegel, who prefers to be called Bernie, was born in Brooklyn, New York. He attended Colgate University and Cornell University Medical College, where he graduated with honors. His surgical training took place at Yale New Haven Hospital, West Haven Veterans Hospital, and the Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. He is a former president of the American Holistic Medicine Association. In 1989, he retired from the practice of general and pediatric surgery to travel around the world, speaking to patients and their caregivers. His latest book is Buddy's Candle, a book for children dealing with loss. Welcome to the show, Bernie.
Hi, thank you. Hi. I've already thought about what will fill up the hour, so I have to come back again for the next hour.
Very good, I love it.
Listening to the two of you. Can I start?
Yes, go.
Absolutely, Bernie.
One was a Buddhist story, you know, in which a man has a horrible life, great loss, and he goes to a guru and says, how can I handle this? And she says, just keep repeating all day long, thank you for everything, I have no complaint whatsoever. And he does that for a year, comes back, he says, I don't know, it hasn't made much difference. And she, what shall I do now? And she says the same thing. Go home and every few hours say, thank you for everything, I have no complaint whatsoever. And he finally really realizes that it's up to him and he finds enlightenment. But I have found that literally saying that to myself at difficult moments does change me. Mm-hmm. It literally changes my chemistry. Or even laughing. I mean, I know this may sound absurd to you if you say I've had a loss and I'm depressed, but just laugh at nothing. I mean, you don't have to find something funny, and you will find...
And just practice that sound, right?
Yeah, you feel better, and the people around you start smiling and laughing, and they don't know why you're laughing, but it's contagious. And again, you change your chemistry. So, you know, we have choices.
Absolutely, Bernie. In fact, a couple years ago, they had a laughter workshop at Compassionate Friends,
yeah.
And the only thing people did was to go in and laugh. There was no word said.
Right.
And they said that workshop alone made such a significant shift in the way they felt.
Yeah. I've been at those, too, where I've gotten out of control laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know that there's nothing to laugh at, you know
right.
what I mean? And yet your body has just taken over and doesn't stop.
And your body doesn't exactly know.
Yeah, and the other was a line, you see, it's partly what you've done. Out of your loss, you've created this program and are helping others. Well, you know what, it suddenly jumps back, you know, the book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People, by Kushner.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
You know, in a sense, I wrote to him saying, wait a minute, this is a good thing, your son died. You've written a book that's helped millions of people. You know, now, you know, I know that you'd say, well, how could you say that to him? But ultimately, it isn't a bad thing, because look what he did with it and that you're doing with it. So, you know, I grew up with a mother, you couldn't label anything bad because they were God's redirections, and something good will come of this. And I think that's what you've done.
I like
that. But the other is...
God's redirections.
When you go to the supermarket, having had a child die or a loved one die or even your pet die, people don't know that.
Right.
But
right.
You go to the supermarket with a bandage over your eye or your arm or leg or sit in a wheelchair, and people look and say, oh, you're wounded. And they'll
mm-hmm.
talk to you. And I mean this literally, and I always recommend it to people. Go to work with a bandage over your eye, and people you've worked with for 20 years will tell you things they've never told you before about their wounds.
Mm-hmm.
And Thornton Wilder wrote a story called The Pool at Bethesda. You go to the pool. If you are there when the angel is there, you get into the water. The angel troubles the waters, and you're healed. And a doctor keeps going because he's got all kinds of troubles. And one day, oh, boy, I'm lucky. The angel's here. So he heads for the water, but the angel gets in his way and says, no, not you. You draw back. He says, wait a minute. I may be a doctor, but I got troubles too. And the angel says, without your wound, where would your power be? It's your melancholy that makes your low voice tremble into the hearts of men. The very angels themselves cannot persuade the wretched and blundering children on earth, as can one human being broken on the wheels of living. In love service, only the wounded soldier can serve. Draw back. And the doctor turns and starts home all depressed. But on the way home, everybody's opening their doors yelling, doctor, come into my house. My daughter only talks to you. Doctor, my son's sitting in the dark, and he'll only come out to talk to you. And, you know, after a few houses, he realizes that if he weren't wounded, he wouldn't be helping all these people. And I have to add also that would you rather die first and not have the pain? I mean, think of living to be 100 and outliving children,
right.
know, spouse, loved ones, pets, neighbors. It's painful. And so a lot of times when I've worked with 90-year-olds as a doctor, I tell them, come to our support groups because you'll be a therapist. And one lady, this just popped into my head, we're sitting in the room and everybody's talking what they're afraid of. All these fears are getting overwhelming. I can't handle it anymore. So I turned to her. She's in her 90s, sitting there quietly, and I said, what are you afraid of? Mm-hmm. And there's dead silence. And the minutes go by. And after several minutes, she said, oh, I know. I said, what is it? She said, driving on the parkway at night. And, you know, she had lived through everything. And suddenly,
right.
you see, we're all laughing, realizing, okay, we can handle it.
Yeah, you get. That's yeah. one thing I always hear from bereaved parents is that you do lose your fear, which and people go out and try things like we're doing. I mean, I never thought I was going to do an internet radio show and Heidi would be my co-host. And you do get some courage to do things. You know, you were talking about recognizing people don't recognize loss. I think that was one of the benefits in the old country when people wore black. No, don't you? And they wore it for a while.
Yes, but, you know, that's part of why I wrote that book, Buddy's Candle, because when my dad died, you know, the doctor in me is feeling guilty. I wish I could have done more. And I thought, okay, what I'm going to do is wear black every day to remind me that I'm here for a limited time. But then I began to think, this is sick. You're going to get dressed in black every day? What's your father? You know, if your father showed up, what would he say? Hey, son, lighten up, you know, and live. And that's when it really struck me that, yes, I want people to accept their mortality and that they will experience loss, but that's why you ought to have a nice day, you know what I mean? Go out and enjoy the day, because who knows when it's your last day.
But Bernie, I think what's hard for a lot of our listeners is when their children die before them.
Yes.
Because they feel like that's not the way it's supposed to be in
right.
life, and maybe I don't even want to go on anymore because my child has actually died before me.
Yeah. But
well,
that's why I would say if your child showed up, and why that symbol, you see, if your child showed up, what are they going to say?
Right.
Yes, be depressed so I know you love me. You know, kill
right.
yourself. No, they're going to say, look, lighten up, enjoy the day.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was the symbol in the book, you know, that if every child in heaven is carrying a beautiful candle and you find your child with a dark candle and go over and say, oh, let me light it for you. And they say, they do, but your tears keep putting it out.
Oh, yeah, this is a wonderful book.
I like that, Bernie.
Yeah,
it just helped me let go of the black. You know, well, and this is another true story. When one of our, I mean, we had always had a house full of pets. One of the dogs died. And I'm every day looking for a rock to put on his grave because I bury everybody in our yard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm building a monument. And then I thought one day, you know, this is crazy. I'm looking for a rock every day. Why don't I bring him a flower?
Mm.
And I just felt the change in me. You know, then every morning I'm going out looking for a beautiful flower to bring to him, not a rock. And I think that's the same message, you know, that what your loved one wants you to look for is the flower, is the rock, you know, not the rock, but
right.
to live.
Mm-hmm.
There's another up in heaven. There are a lot of plaques behind God's desk. And I know this from being on the board of directors as a consultant. And when one of them says, if you go around saying, I got a miserable life, I'll show you what miserable really is. And if you go around saying, I've got a wonderful life, I'll show you what wonderful really is.
Wonderful.
So we're the ones deciding. And I might say, it doesn't matter if you're 90 and your son is 70 and dies. You know, outliving your child is painful. I've seen it in our family. One of my sister's children died. And, yeah, it's
Absolutely.
Painful to put your child in a grave. But, again, you know, what is life about? I'd say find, in a sense, other children and keep, you know, reparenting and finding reasons for being here.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, we're going to take a break. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart, and we want to wish you a, I'm not sure, happy Thanksgiving. I know people sometimes don't feel that happy, but a successful Thanksgiving or whatever Thanksgiving it is that you can find. You can reach us through our blog, thegriefblog.com, and these shows are archived on our site as well as the Compassionate Friends website. Please stay tuned to hear more about finding Thanksgiving after loss with our guest, Bernie Siegel.
A healthy dialogue for your lifestyle. Voice America Health and Wellness.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at compassionatefriends.org.
Hello, Doctors Gloria and Heidi are pleased to announce that their new book, Teen Grief Relief, Parenting with Understanding, Support, and Guidance, published by Rainbow Books, is now available. Grief Relief can be ordered through thegriefblog.com as well as Amazon. Book orders can be made through the Book Clearinghouse at 800-431-1579. This book is a must for any family suffering a loss. Get your copy right now at thegriefreliefblog.com or amazon.com.
Hello, my name is Neil Chethick. I'm the executive editor for the Open to Hope Foundation and author of the book Father Loss, How Sons Deal with the Death of Their Dad. As editor of the foundation, it's my job to find writers for our website, writers who would like to contribute their articles, poetry, and personal stories about grief, loss, hope, and recovery. If you'd like to write for our website, please contact me. You can do that by visiting opentohope.com and click on the category Write for Us. Then you can start bringing your words, your stories, to our fast-growing audience around the world.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel about finding Thanksgiving after loss. Welcome back to the show, Bernie and Gloria.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Well, we've got a call-in. Could we have that call-in with Neil? Hi, Neil.
Hi, how are you doing?
Great, how are you? Thanks for calling in.
I'm really well. Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you. Did you have a question or a thought for Dr. Siegel?
Yes. This is the first Thanksgiving that we're having without my grandmother, who is in her 90s and passed away. And we've been, I've been at Thanksgiving dinner with her every single year for just about my entire life. And it's one of those things where I don't want to ignore it, and I think as Dr. Siegel was saying earlier, I don't want to wallow in it, but I'm just wondering at that dinner table or on the day, what is it that you might suggest that we do to try to, include her memory or in some way honor her without turning it into something really, negative or a downer?
Well, I'll tell you a wonderful way. My father died laughing, and I mean that literally, because of stories my mother was telling. I mean, to give you one punchline, she said that boys were walking down the beach, toss coins to see who would get the girl she was sitting with who had a bad reputation. Mm. And she said, your father lost and got me. Mm. And so their first date was because he lost the coin toss and had to take her out. And then on, it got more and more crazy, and he died laughing at those stories. So my first comment would be is have a chair for your grandmother. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody has to sit in it. You could put her picture in it if you want to. And then you ought to have a moment where you say to everybody, let's all tell a story. What do we remember about Grandma? And, the stories, I hope that she was enough of a character that you've got some humorous stories to tell of things she may have done or said. And by the time you get around the table, everybody will be smiling and having warm memories. The other is, look for a sign. I know this sounds crazy, but consciousness does not end with the body. So when my mother died, I always look for pennies, okay? And the great-grandchildren were calling, because she was in her 90s too, were calling them pennies from heaven. And literally, I found 36 pennies going up and back in our driveway and around the house that I couldn't explain being there, meaning I'd walk to the mailbox and on the way back see pennies that I didn't see on the way down. So,
I read about that in your book, one of your books, Bernie, and I was so fascinated because I was telling Heidi, because I find dimes.
Yeah.
She does, in the weirdest
places.
Yeah,
that's a number of wholeness, too. The 10 is about creation. From the nothing comes the one. So the one and the zero are about all kinds of relationships. The 1, 2, 3, 4 add up to 10. It's a very also meaningful number. I was thinking of one other thing. We were sitting in a cancer support group. The woman was telling us how her daughter loved birds, and she was murdered. And at another daughter's outdoor wedding, a bird interrupted the wedding, and everybody said, it's your daughter.
Wow.
Wow. Well, guess what flies in an open window at that moment?
A bird.
Yeah. Now, I've sat in that room for 6 years, you know. No bird has ever come in the window, boom, at that moment. And it's really mystical and eerie. And whether you believe or not, but if you want, I'd say look for a sign. Another friend last night was telling me that one of her children died and a rainbow was very meaningful. And on an anniversary of the child's death, the mother said, gee, I didn't see any rainbows today. Well, a guy came, fixed her house, I don't know, like a plumber. And on the way out, he said, you know, on the way over here, I saw a beautiful rainbow. And it's like, oh, thank you. And he said, I don't even know why I told you that. And he walks away and gets in his truck.
Watch for signs and watch for other people bringing them.
Yeah.
Well, Neil, thank you so much for calling in, and look for those signs and have a wonderful
tell
Thanksgiving.
Stories. Yeah, so everybody smiles with
thank
their
you.
Memories. All right.
Well, that's something for all of our audience out there to think about. Is I love that idea of the empty chair. We actually did that, didn't we, Heidi, for Scott?
Yes, and put his pictures in it and all that, and it was wonderful.
And even through the house. I mean, I have what I call sanctuaries in the house of, like, I painted a portrait of my parents. They've died, but it's in the front hall, so they're a part of my life. If I'm having a bad day, guess who's looking at me? And
right.
I think, oh, I don't want them to, you know, I'll cheer up.
You know, I was thinking of talking to somebody recently, though, whose daughter was an artist, and they have 100 of her pictures in their house.
Yeah.
To the point where the sibling doesn't want to come home and study from college. He said it's very distracting, he can't handle it. So
well,
what about people that go overboard, Bernie?
More his, I'd say, I don't know whose problem it is, you know, in the sense of too many versus his discomfort. I think they all have things and issues to deal with. One other thing that happened that was kind of mystical, there was a story in which a woman lost a child and was in China, and she wrote her doctor saying, I thought of you when this happened, because there was a plaque on the wall, and I don't know what it said, so I asked people to translate it for me. And they said, enjoy yourself, it's later than you think. And
wow.
She said, I immediately thought, all right, I'm going to have another child. And I thought of you and all that you did for me. The doctor took several months off because it made him look at his life differently. But we're cleaning out my mother's house. She's lived there for decades. I go into the den, and hanging on the wall, something I have never seen in 30 years, I don't know how it got there, is a Chinese plaque with the words in English under it. Enjoy yourself. It's later than you think. You know, like a bronze plaque.
Right.
That's in my kitchen. So when I walk out of the kitchen, yep, there's Mama saying, hey, kid, lighten up, you know?
Wow. Well, I've got something in my office, and I'm a clinical psychologist. It's what Andy Warhol said, and he said, be happy about nothing.
That's right. Be grateful.
I
That's
love
why.
That.
Thank you for everything. I have no complaint whatsoever.
Well,
you know, if you're grateful for life, for the opportunity, then you have a different life.
And it's good to hear you, an MD, say, with your credentials and background, that seeing signs is a normal, wonderful thing, because some people think, am I going crazy? Is this strange? Because you hear people that see butterflies and dragonflies and all sorts of signs.
I mean, a big part of it has to do with the lack of our education, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to mention that, too. See, as physicians, we're not trained to deal with loss and death. I mean it.
Yeah, you're there to help people and make them better.
And most people die in the hospital in the middle of the night, so they don't upset their family, and the doctor's not there to, you know, to stop them.
Right.
And they don't even use the word dead in the hospital. You know, we pass, fail, lost. You say, I mean, I asked someone if a friend of mine died. This is in the hospital. His bed was empty. I said, Alan died last night. They said, no, he Brady'd. Now, that one you don't know, but the name of the morgue at Yale is the Brady Building.
Oh.
And I thought,
he Brady'd.
How sick these people are that they can't even say he died. And something I do at my workshops and lectures, I'll often say, here's a letter I got. And it's a letter consoling me about the death of a loved one. And I say, who wrote it? A doctor or a veterinarian? And guess who everybody votes for? A veterinarian. And they're right. I got this compassionate letter when one of our pets died. Wow. And my mother did drive a lot of doctors crazy because I was her son. So I was impressed that three doctors called me when she died to say what a wonderful lady she was. But how many of you have ever heard from a doctor mm-hmm. when your family member died? Or that the doctor showed up at the funeral?
Actually, my pediatrician did.
Mm-hmm.
Came to Scott's funeral. I was amazed.
Yeah.
And his partner.
Or woman. Right.
They came and went through
it,
the line.
It is amazing because it's so unusual. I mean, usually you don't hear of that. And
right.
It's so important for people when it happens. It's, like you said, Mom, you remembered.
You know,
it's painful. You
yeah,
know, I get to know you and you die, I'm going to get more upset.
Right, and how many people can I do this with? You know, I worked at the University of Rochester Medical Center on a liaison team there that George Engel started.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to work with the cancer patients. And you know that cancer doctors were the worst at deserting their patients?
Yeah.
Which I always found fascinating.
You know, see, part of that has to do also with why are you an oncologist, if you know what I mean. There are unhealthy reasons for choosing medicine and oncology. And those things aren't analyzed either.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give an example so people understand. If I have destructive tendencies, say, and I become a surgeon as a reaction formation to my destructive tendencies, I'm not going to be a healthy surgeon. In
right.
other words, I'm enjoying cutting people up.
John Romano wrote something
about that?
And what if
you become an oncologist because you need to fail? You know, things that you can't cure, can't fix.
Right.
So, you know, or look at, what's his name, Kevorkian, you know, overwhelmed with death. And how he thinks I can control death. I'll become a pathologist. I'll help people die. I think if somebody had really sat down with him in medical school, he could have been a lot healthier. Because I have to add, I've helped people die, but I don't help kill them, if you know what I mean. I help them complete their life, straighten things out with their family, and I've seen all these things. You see, the other part is, I always forget her name down in Florida, you know, where it went into court, can I stop beating my wife, and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've had people like this where hospices and lawyers say, you can't pull the tube, it's a murder. But where I have said to these people who are in a coma for years, and the family says, you know, there's no point in their going on. I've said to them, your family loves you, your love will stay with them, if you need to go, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And 15 minutes later, this lady died. See?
Right.
It's,
right.
It's, again, she had permission. She's not, you know, letting her family down.
Yeah, well, my dad, when he was dying, and my daughter told me that I better, Heidi's sister said, you better come back and see him. I lived 1,000 miles away because he thinks I'm you. So I flew in, was there for, spent the evening with him. The next morning, my mother and I went over to the hospital, and I said, it's okay, you can go now, and he died.
Mm-hmm. I have to, you see, so that people know it's okay to say that. I've also had people come out of a coma, open their eyes, and say, I'm not going anywhere. and then the family can go home and, you know, relax and know
right.
that this is a person's choice.
Right.
But, right.
Exactly.
All right, when we come back in a minute, I'd like to add the one thing that is immortal that everybody needs to know about.
Okay.
Very good.
We can talk about that when we come back from break. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host, Dr. Heidi Horsley. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. And we're talking to Bernie Siegel. You can reach us through our blog, griefblog.com, and the Open to Hope Foundation. These shows are brought to you by the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
Hello, my name is Beverly McManus. In 2003, my husband Steve died of cancer. It's been a tough journey, but it's been softened by being part of the Open to Hope Foundation caring community. This year, Abel Keough, whose wife died by suicide, and I have launched the www.opentohopedeathofaspouse.com website. We're working hard to have timely articles and create a dialogue of support. The important thing to know is that you are not alone. We'd like to share your grief journey with you and others who have lost their partners and invite you to help us get the word out about the www.opentohopedeathofaspouse.com site. You can also reach us by going to opentohope.com and scrolling down to the bottom of the page where all of the Foundation blog links can be viewed. Thanks.
Hello, I'm Eric Kiffel, former quarterback of the Detroit Lions and outreach coordinator of the University of Michigan Depression Center. It gives me great pleasure to announce the publication of my autobiography, Real Men Do Cry, a quarterback's inspiring story of tackling depression and surviving suicide loss, written with Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley, and published by Quality of Life. Real Men Do Cry takes you on my journey of fame and fortune to unbearable pain and depression following the death of my 15-year-old son, Jeff, and gives practical information on the warning signs and risks of depression. My story ends with an uplifting message of hope and recovery. I have faith that if I have made it, you can too. You can visit my website to learn more about my book at erichippel.com and more about depression on depressioncenter.org. Thank you.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi on Healing the Grieving Heart.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel about finding Thanksgiving after loss. Welcome back to the show, Bernie and Gloria.
Thanks,
Heidi. Well, Bernie, you had a point you were going to make when we went to break, and after that we have Beverly
All right,
calling on the line.
To make it short, I mean, there's a story in which a child is willing to give his life to save someone else, and his parents have to agree. And I say to people, what do you think he said to his parents? And these are the words from that story. Consider this, sooner or later my body will perish at any rate, but if it perishes without love, which the wise declare is the only thing of permanence, of what use would have been? And I can really say to people, if you want to be immortal, love somebody. Mm-hmm. Because you'll get this, the Bridge of San Luis Rey, where a bridge collapses and people die, ends with, and we ourselves shall be loved for a while and forgotten, but the love will have been enough. All those impulses of love return to the love that made them. Even memory is not necessary for love. There's a land of the living and the land of the dying, and the bridge is love, the only survival, the only meaning. And one more book I will recommend to people, The Human Comedy by William Saroyan. One of his quotes is, the best part of a good man stays forever, for love is immortal and makes all things immortal, while hate dies every minute. And, you know, that's a story that almost fits life today, except it happened back in World War II, you know, where you lose a child in the war and an accident and different things happen. But, as I say, the only part that remains immortal is the love.
Is love. Wonderful. Well, we've got a call-in from Beverly. Hi, Beverly.
How are you?
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Did you have a question for Dr. Siegel?
Yeah, my husband died 5 years ago, and every year during the holidays, I feel like I get sick. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas of ways to prevent it. I feel like I'm ready now. I don't need to get sick during the holidays just because I miss him so much.
Well, some of it is reprogramming yourself. Visualize the holidays, and you're not getting sick. See, if you said to me, I'm having surgery next week. What can I do? I'd say, picture yourself going to the hospital, having the operation, waking up, feeling wonderful and hungry, and going home the next day. And your body doesn't know that you haven't had the surgery, if you know what I mean. You're training yourself the way an athlete would by picturing themselves performing. So I'd say, change the picture. See, what you've experienced every year is, oh, here comes a holiday, I'm getting sick. And it becomes hypnotic because you have lived that. So I'd say start visualizing the opposite. Here's the holiday. I've had a wonderful time and a wonderful experience, and good things have happened. And picture that 3, 4, 5 times a day. Every time you get a few minutes, just think of it. And you can change your body's experience. So when the holiday comes, your body is now saying, oh, hey, we've had wonderful holidays. Let's have another one. See, your body, this is a line from a poem by John Updike. Our body loves us. It does. You cut yourself, it heals. But you have to let your body know that you love life and love it. And when you change that message, your body will respond differently. But if the message is, I'm not enjoying life and holidays are terrible, yeah, your body is really saying, gee, I'll try to get you out of as many holidays as I can. You see, maybe we can die quickly and you won't have to go through any more holidays. And that's part of why you begin to feel sick. It's the chemical, in a sense, changes that go on in your body. I mean, when I say chemical, it's the various hormones, immune function, all these things that are changing.
I love that. Training yourself the way an athlete would and visualize
right.
being well.
You
and,
really can change your...
And you talk about that in your book, about being an athlete, the 101 Exercises for the Soul is a great book for,
for
looking at those.
The thing that, if I put you in a comedy during the holiday, you know, like, let's say I take a script from I Love Lucy and I say, you got to do this every day, and you're Lucy, you change your body chemistry. We know this by drawing blood while people are performing. So immune function increases, stress hormone levels go down. Then if I said to you, now I'm putting you in a tragedy, yeah, you'd be even worse than you are normally. Because even though you're only acting, your body has changed.
Your body doesn't know the difference, does
it? That's right. And that's why, you know, a lot of actors in the middle of the winter, you know, it's the death of a salesman, they drop out with the flu and can't keep performing. But if you're doing a Mel Brooks thing, you know, you don't have any trouble getting through the winter, you know, in the producers, because you're having a wonderful time on stage and everybody's laughing. So act as if, and, you know, it relates back to, I call it being born again. There are a lot of way of rephrasing it, but act as if you're the person you want to be. Create the person you want to be by acting as if you're that person. And don't get critical of yourself. In other words, if this holiday you say, gee, I still got sick even though I did what Dr. Siegel, I mean, stop criticizing yourself. You're a work in progress. If it was a little better, good. Next holiday, we can be even a little better than that. And because most of us grow up with so much guilt, shame, and blame, every time you try to do something, oh, I did it wrong again. No, it's I'm rehearsing and I'm practicing.
So you're a work in progress, Beverly.
Right.
Wow, I love it. Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Beverly.
Well, Bernie, I've got a story for you that I think is connected with this. I'm going to make it short, but I'm at a dinner with a guy, with a man, and a waiter comes up, and he's a terrible waiter. And he and the guy says to him in a few minutes, he comes back, the waiter comes back, and he says, what do you do for a living? And the waiter says, I'm an actor. And the guy says, it was my husband, said, well, then act like a waiter.
Right.
So his body can change.
Yes, absolutely. See, if you enjoy people, it really doesn't matter what, you know, where you're performing, if you know what I mean. But in every profession, I find those who don't like their profession are complaining about the people.
Right.
I mean, I had a veterinarian say to me, people bring the pets in. You know, yes, you're right. I mean, I meet doctors who say, I was fascinated by the human body, and then people show up in it. you know, so...
You've got
to serve customers. And what I find is I try to keep the child in me alive. That's what helps me. See, when a waiter comes over to the table and says to me, how's everything? My answer is, why are you upsetting me? I'm trying to eat dinner. If you looked in the paper, you listened to the news. I mean, why are you asking me a question like that when I'm trying to enjoy a meal? You know, and the first time you in the restaurant, they look at you like, oh, my God, he's crazy. You know, and they quickly back up. But, you know, when you come back, they realize he was kidding.
Right.
And then it brings the child out in them.
Right.
And truthfully, I find it hard to not answer, you know, from my heart. When people say to me, how are you? I say, are you really ready for an honest answer? Because I'm not into fine, good.
Well, that's the Brooklyn in you, Bernie.
Yeah.
They love.
You know, they look at you, but I really... Oh, and, you know, we talked about the wounded. To everybody listening, if you don't believe this, go out and try it. My wife said to me one day, honey, you're not listening. I said, what do you mean? She said, you just said something that you think is funny. They don't. And what I used to say, and still do, is when people say to me, how are you? So you're checking out the supermarket. They're being polite. How are you today, sir? And I would answer... with a serious expression, I'm depressed. I've run out of my antidepressant. And my doctor's away on vacation, so I can't refill my prescription. 80% of people say, I know how you feel.
Yeah.
You get taken to lockers and offered their antidepressants. The women in the line behind you open their pocketbooks and offer you theirs. I'm not kidding. It's overwhelming. And how many kids are on it is amazing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But you see, again, it's when you suddenly reveal your wound, you know, in a serious way, because that's what my wife made me aware of. I'm smiling, thinking it's a joke, and it isn't. And mm-hmm. then, but then also therapy and compassion happen. Because when I've said that to some people, you know, they'll say, let me help you. Let me finish checking out, and then we'll talk.
Right. People are amazing how they come forward.
As soon as they do that, I say, you've had a major loss or a life-threatening illness, haven't you? They say, yeah, how do you know that? I said, because you're showing compassion, so I know you've been wounded.
Right. Absolutely. Well, before we go to break, I want to take our next phone call from Irene. Are you there, Irene?
I'm here.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Did you have a question for Bernie?
I do have, but first of all, I want to say, Bernie, thank you so much for your work. I'm a retired RN, a kind of retired.
Right.
Your book, Love, Medicine, and Miracles, gave us tools, holistic tools, when there really weren't any, and I don't even know how many copies of it I gave out to people who were told they were terminal. It's, you know, your work is wonderful. And
thank
my question,
you. And the nurses were my teachers, let me tell you. They really were my support.
Yeah, we all teach each other, don't we?
Right.
My question is Thanksgiving-ish. What do you say has been the most personally rewarding aspect of your work?
Great question.
Where do you get your...
Well, it's knowing that I've made a difference and helped people. So my life has meaning. You know, when I get emails and from all over the world, I used to get letters, but, you know... I realize, wow, you know, somebody in Japan, I've been invited to Korea, Italy, Spain, but it's, you know, that I've touched so many people and their lives. And again, I give them credit. What I mean is, if I get an email or a call saying, thank you, you saved my life, I say, no, I can't save it, only you can. So in a sense, I'd say it's like being the coach of a winning team, if you know what I mean.
Ah, yeah.
And so you know you've helped so many people, and therefore your life is meaningful. And I have a belt buckle that says my name, Bernie. And a lot of times I go out and people say, hey, Bernie, hey. I say, oh, you know me. And they say, no, it's your belt buckle. I know you. You know, that's when my ego goes back down again. But you know, I realize how many people I've touched, and that's the greatest gift of all. And I would say that we all have that capability because I learned, you know, in one of my meditations, I said, you know, I'm tired of traveling. How can I help people? And the answer was spread seeds like a flower. And I thought, thank you. And, you know, each of us, when we touch someone else, they become the seed and they can pass that, you know, meaningful action on again and that beauty.
My guess is you have a wonderful flower garden growing everywhere.
Well,
absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Irene, welcome. Thank you so much for calling in and have
you,
a great
Irene.
Thanksgiving.
Thank you. I'm very honored to have been able to do so. Thanks.
Well, it's time for our final break, and please stay tuned to hear more advice from our guest, Bernie Siegel, and to hear about next week's special topic and guest. You're listening to Healing the Grieving Heart. You can reach us through the Grief Blog and through the Open to Hope Foundation. Please stay tuned for more.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Dr. Heidi Horsley. Just a reminder that Healing the Grieving Heart, Internet Radio, and thegriefblog.com are sponsored by the Open to Hope Foundation, a nonprofit web-based foundation whose mission is to help bereaved individuals cope with their pain and find hope in their future. My mom and I hope you will visit our foundation website at www.opentohope.com and become a part of our caring community.
A new child bereavement study is being conducted by a doctoral student at Seattle Pacific University. This study investigates the positive and negative personal and relationship outcomes of parents who have lost a child. These questions are based on you, your present relationship with your partner, your social support following your loss, and your personal experiences following your loss. If you have lost a child, you are invited to participate in this 20-minute survey. Participation is confidential, and you may change your mind at any time. If you think you would like to participate, please go to www.lostresearch.webs.com Or, if you have any questions or would prefer the questionnaires be sent to you, please contact Hillary Van Horn by phone at 1-530-902-4562 or by email at hvanhorn@coh.org. Thank you for your time and consideration.
The Compassionate Friends Self-Help Bereavement Support Organization has nearly 600 chapters in the United States, offering friendship, understanding, and hope to families that have experienced the death of a child, no matter the age or cause. If your family has suffered this tragic loss, there is no reason for you to walk this difficult journey alone. Many who have had a child die have learned how helpful it is to be able to talk or just listen in a group setting with those who truly understand the pain of losing a child. To locate a chapter near you or to receive a free comprehensive bereavement packet, including a copy of the Compassionate Friends National Magazine, We Need Not Walk Alone, call toll-free 877-969-0010. You are also invited to visit the TCF National website at CompassionateFriends.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
And now we rejoin Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi for our final segment of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope and renewal for those who have suffered the loss of a loved one.
Welcome back to Healing the Grieving Heart. For those of you just joining us today, I'm Dr. Heidi with my mom, Dr. Gloria, and we're talking with Dr. Bernie Siegel about finding Thanksgiving after loss. Welcome back to the show, Bernie and Gloria.
Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you, Heidi.
Well, we wanted to say to you, we hope your Thanksgiving is working out the way you want it to, and we hope that for those people who are having a tough time that you will realize it is just one day, and we give you our blessings and our love on your journey. So, Bernie, welcome back for our final segment.
Thank you. You know, one thought I had, we had one call in from a man, and I'd like
from
to make
Neil.
That
uh-huh.
point, yeah, that it's very hard for the men to deal with feelings. Men are into doing. I mean, I know men who have committed suicide when they were told you can't work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I always say I'd put that on my refrigerator to get my wife to give me a break, you know. That's not a reason for me to die. I say,
honey, she's got you working, huh?
You hear what the doctor said? Now, give me a break. But, you know, so for the men out there, I'd say, please, don't store this up inside you. You're hurting yourself. And since the last call was from a nurse, what the nurses have a problem with, you're asked to do something you don't want to do. What do you answer? And most nurses say, well, I would do it. You know, they don't know, in a sense, when to stop nursing. But
mm-hmm.
you have to realize when you don't say no to what you don't want to do, you're saying no to yourself and your life. So to the nurses and everyone out there, I'd say when you're asked to do something and you don't feel right doing it, say no. Because you have to remember, otherwise you're giving up your life's time in an unhealthy way. So
now,
pay attention to your heart. And
kind of your idea of staying empowered.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's not that you're not being nice or helpful. I always say, I don't know who's going to die first. So if it feels like something I want to do out of love, I'll do it. And if it's something I don't want to do, I'll say no.
Mm-hmm. That's an important thing. I mean, you know, people have been amazed when we talk to them about the fact that, you know, if you lost your child, you have the right to say no. You have the right to walk out of the room. You've lost a sibling, whatever. You can't be in this conference room or this meeting because
go to graduations, etc.
Right.
Things that you don't, you know, weddings if you don't want to go.
I'm glad you said that word, graduation. You're finished with school. What is the graduation called?
Commencement.
Yeah. Now, where did they come up with that one? Mm-hmm. Why don't you go to your termination?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people have to realize life is about beginnings. Mm-hmm. It's constantly changing. It's about commencements. When you give a report in heaven, you finish it by saying the beginning, not the end. Because God says we have to start using the information and the change. So mm-hmm. keep beginning.
So in other words, when one chapter of your life is closed because of a death, another chapter is beginning.
That's right. Life is a circle. The Bible ends in a revelation, not a conclusion. So, yeah. And somebody else, I don't know what I read, if you come to a fork in the road, take both forks. because he said life is a circle. Yeah, Harry Chapin, all my life's a circle, sunrise and sundown.
Could you talk a little bit about your book, Buddy's Candle, the one you just finished?
I mean, I wrote it because I see so much grief that people don't know how to deal with and loss of loved ones. I mean, we have a lot of animals. You read the pet magazines, and everybody's in pain over my cat died, my dog died, you know, your child died. I was just at a grief meeting for people who have lost, you know, through miscarriage or in the first year of life or had a stillborn, and, you know, talk there. And for me, it's learning from my pain, too. And the symbolism of the Campbell, of the candle was that I worked with the angel of death because my mother has a lot of connections. That's why I've gotten jobs in heaven. But you see, you work with the angel of death, and I operate on a lot of children. And you walk into a room, and there's a child lying in the bed, and the angel of death is at the foot of the bed. That means the child's going to die. Mm-hmm. And I always say to people, what would you do? And what I did was turn the bed around. And the angel said, you don't have any idea what you're doing, Siegel, but it's the first time you've ever, you know, acted up like this. Because the angel had said to me, I'm at the foot of the bed, then console the family and prepare them. I'm at the head of the bed, you know, you can take credit for being a wonderful doctor. But with this child, I couldn't take it. I mean, see, I'm questioning, you know, God, why do you give children cancer? Why do these things happen? And, you know, God's answer is the perfect world is not creation. It's a magic trick that we're here to live and learn and show compassion to each other. And I think the day that human beings are capable of truly loving, the world will become perfect and we'll be able to handle it. But until we are, we'd go nuts if this was a perfect world. I mean that. In 2 weeks, we'd all be complaining about the weather and everything's fine and I don't know what to do with myself.
We'd be bored.
Yeah.
Right. You know, I was talking to a fireman about it one day and he's like, you know, I don't know why people die in fires. And I said, do you like your job? And he said, I love it. I said, you wouldn't have a job.
Right.
You know.
Yes. But it's, again, his way, if it's his way of contributing to his love to the world and caring, then it's meaningful. But anyway, the angel said to me, come on, I'm going to take you up to heaven. And that's where, you know, something I mentioned earlier, he said, all the children who died this month are in a parade. And I said to him, there's a kid coming with a dark candle. And the angel said, fine, go light it. And when I went up, it was the child they had operated on who had died. Mm. And I said, Tony, your candle's out. I'm going to light it for you. And he said, Dr. Siegel, they do, but your tears keep putting it out. Mm. And really, when that happened, I just realized, okay, let go of the black. Come back to life. And then the angel said, I have one more thing to show you, that those candles that you saw in the parade burn eternally, but when someone is ready to begin a new life, they put the candle in this room. And he showed me this room with millions of candles. And I said, oh, the big tall ones are young people and the little ones are old people? He said, no, some of the little ones are young people and some of the tall ones are old people. Do you want to see your candle? No, thank you. And I mean that. I don't want to see my candle. I will live my life to its fullest, but I don't want to know what day I'm going to die. But I think that's what we have to understand, that we're all born, in a sense, with a certain, you know, number of inches to our candle, certain number of heartbeats, and that's the program. And our job, I always say, is to burn up completely. Don't burn out ahead of time so that you live your life. Because Monday morning, literally, we have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses. So find a life that you can love, especially one that may make you lose track of time. I think that's the healthiest state you could be in. Or as one of our kids said, because I said to a group of people, if you had 50 minutes to live, what would you do? And I didn't like some of the answers I heard. But when our son said, I buy a quart of chocolate ice cream and eat it, I said, you're enlightened. I don't have to worry about you. But you know, the other people said, wait a minute. What if what I told you is my chocolate ice cream? And that enlightened me, you know, to understand that we may each have a different chocolate ice cream. So what you tell me you want to do, I may say I don't want to do, but that doesn't mean you're not loving doing it. And that's the part I think people have to look for. Look for your chocolate ice cream. Live your life to its fullest.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show this Thanksgiving,
Bernie.
My pleasure. It's been wonderful having you on, and have a nice Thanksgiving yourself.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bernie.
Bless you both.
It's time to close our show, and we want to thank Bernie Siegel. Please stay tuned again next week when our topic will be loss in the military, and our guest will be Amy Neuberger Miller. Amy Neuberger Miller's brother, U.S. Army Specialist Christopher Neuberger, was killed in Iraq in 2007. Amy is the public affairs officer of TAPS, the Organization for People Who've Lost Family Members. And our second guest will be Dr. Reg Williams, who works with veterans in depression and is at the University of Michigan Depression Center. This show's archived on our blog, thegriefblog.com, as well as the Compassionate Friends website. Please stay tuned again next Thursday at 9 Pacific Standard, 12 Eastern, for more of Healing the Grieving Heart, a show of hope, renewal, and support. Remember, others have been there before you and made it. You can too. You need not walk alone. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley. Bernie, thank you for all the work you do to help people throughout the world heal after loss.
Bless you both.
You have been listening to Dr. Gloria and Dr. Heidi Horsley on Healing the Grieving Heart, heard live every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on health.voiceamerica.com and worldtalkradio.com. Healing the Grieving Heart is archived on thegriefblog.com as well as the CompassionateFriends.org websites. Tune in again next week, and thanks for listening.